From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
No science background, a business major, marketing concentration, but I was just doing simplistic mixes like natural oil blends for hair that weren't too heavy, then outward guarding, and then also like leave-in conditioners. Very, very simple stuff. I hired a cosmetic chemist to do my formulations for me. But the stuff I made at home was very basic. But then I was mixing and matching different hair care brands and products. One shampoo or conditioner from this line, you know, I had, you know, stylist from that line, but nothing really for me. That really was the aha product. And so that's kind of the struggle at that moment. There was a newly natural movement that was happening where women were looking to embrace their natural textures and start, and lots of, you know, relaxer sales started to decline. And so I kind of launched Curls right at the cusp of this new market.
Maisha Dellinger, founder, president, and CEO of Curls LLC, and author of Against All Odds, From the Projects to the Penthouse, published by Brown Girls Books. Dellinger knows a lot about hair. As president and CEO of Curls, she created the company with her own savings due to her frustration and not being able to find effective products for naturally curly hair. Today, Curls is a multi-million dollar brand that's continuing to grow. Founded in 2002 in Elk Grove, California, Curls continues to maintain the highest standards for quality ingredients and product dependability. Dellinger collaborated with leading cosmetic experts to develop Curls. Her intense desire to create a remarkable line for a growing yet overlooked audience, coupled with an extensive chemistry background, proved to be a winning combination. During the last decade, Curls has emerged as a leader in the natural hair care industry. I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Maisha Dellinger, founder, president, and CEO of Curls LLC, and author of Against All Odds, From the Projects to the Penthouse, In Black America.
I would say resilience is important. I would say hard work, determination, not giving up. They're common traits with successful business people. It's not about luck. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. It's not luck. It's working hard and having a laser focus on what you want to achieve and just pursuing your goals without giving up. You have to be persistent and diligent and continue to work hard towards your goal. If you pour hard work into something, you're going to reap the benefits of it. And again, I understand that not all businesses are successful because 80% fell within the first year. Mm-hmm. So, but failure can be a teacher. And I failed at one business of mine, but then I continued on with Curls. So sometimes failure happens, but you can use that as a learning path as well.
For Maisha Dellinger, life in the rough streets of Sacramento, California, was paving the way for a lifetime of poverty, despair, and dysfunction. But while criminals ran rampant, gangs took over, and her own relative chose drugs over dreams, Dellinger knew she was destined for something greater. Rewriting her story, determined to write a different ending to her story, Dellinger set out to alter her destiny through college and hard work. But her dreams were bigger than just a 9-to-5 job, and she worked tirelessly to pursue a passion of owning her own hair care business. That dedication and commitment has paid off as her company, Curls LLC, is one of the leading natural hair care companies in the country. In 2002, she left corporate America to follow her passion. She launched Curls, an award-winning line of organic hair care products for women and girls with natural waves, curls, and kinks. She single-handedly built a strong demand for her brand, and Target, Sally Beauty, Walmart, and CVS came knocking at her door. In her book, Against All Odds, Dellinger chronicles her journey from the projects to the penthouse, how she overcame an impoverished beginning to lead a life of wealth, privilege, and success doing a job she loves.
Wow. Well, it was very interesting. Sacramento in itself, very nice city to raise a family. Mm-hmm. Where I lived, however, was in Meadowview, which is an area dubbed Danger Island because of all the gang violence, the drug use, and just it was a very unstable environment for children, poor school systems. It was not very productive for a young black boy to be in. My brother winded up, you know, falling prey to all the violence and gang activity and started selling drugs. I had lots of friends who did as well. But I myself took a different path, and used that experience to propel me to change my destiny. Having friends pregnant at 15, friends murdered at 17, home invasions where moms were killed, you know, because of drug violence, and I'm sorry, gang violence and of opposite gang members, just wasn't what I wanted for my children. And it was a very stressful environment to be raised in.
But you had a reprieve every weekend when you went to visit your dad.
Yes. My father, who never married my mom, because she came from the wrong side of the tracks, railroad tracks. She was not educated. Her family, no one finished high school, much less college. No one had an example or experienced success of any kind. My father's family, very opposite end. Vivian Malone, civil rights activist who has done a lot in the community. Jeff Malone, ex-NBA player. Sharon Malone, Eric Holder, you know, U.S. Attorney General. These are people on that side. I didn't see them very often. I saw them every once in a while. I saw my dad twice a month. So he showed me, sometimes twice a month. There are times where he dropped that away and didn't come to see me or pick me up. But for the most part, twice a month. And I saw how the other side lived. And I loved that I could actually, you know, not have to worry about when we're going to eat or, you know, heat, simple things as toilet paper, lunch money. You know, these things were simple, but things that we worried about every day.
How were you able to...
With my father,
go ahead.
Mother, money was an issue.
How were you able to navigate between the two existences?
Wow. I felt very uncomfortable in the other world, being my father's world. I didn't feel like I belonged, really. When I was with him, I was comfortable. When I was with my grandmother, his mother, I was comfortable. Anyone else, I didn't really understand, and so it felt like I didn't belong. My mother's family, I knew everyone. It was a very close-knit family. Every sibling of hers lived within a five-mile radius, 5 to 10 mile. So all the cousins were together, which is a big family. Everyone was poor, but we had a very good time together, and I felt close to them, and that's who I grew up with. So I felt more connected with that side.
Why was it important for you to stay focused while you were in school?
Because education would change my destiny. My father, you know, drilled that in my head. He drilled that into my head. He, you know, civil rights leaders speak like Jesse Jackson. He was taking me to African American Museum. He would take me to like an Alvin Ailey dance show. He made sure to incorporate the positive side of Black culture, and he pumped education. He definitely was pushing for me to do better and do more, and that push actually resonated with me. And I was already a self-starter anyway. My mother, I had to get myself from first grade on. First grade. I look at my children like, in first grade, I would never let my child do so much that I did. I got myself up and dressed and out and walked all over the school and home with the key. And I was responsible for getting my homework done. And I didn't have anyone helping me for my homework. I didn't have anyone telling me to do it. I was self-motivated. My brother wasn't, but he had the same, we were from the same, raised by the same mother in the same household, and he chose to do something else. No one to look after him, but he went another way.
What college did you attend?
I was planning to go to Spelman College, and then I got pregnant with my first child. And I stayed local. I had to stay so my mom could help. So I wound up going to California State University, Sacramento, so that I could actually have assistance with raising my daughter while I finished school.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And I'm speaking with Myesha Dellinger, President, CEO of Curls Incorporated, and author of Against All Odds, From the Projects to the Penthouse. Ms. Dellinger, why was it important for you to tell your story in this work?
Well, for a very long time, I was embarrassed of who I was, where I came from, my background. I was embarrassed of the fact that I was a, you know, unwed mother. I was embarrassed, and I didn't like to tell people where I lived when I lived in Sacramento. Everyone knew Meadowview, you know, what that was. But I realized later, after I had the success and escaped and changed my destiny, that now that I'm here today, I can take the story, because there's so much that happened to me when you read the book.
Right.
A lot of odds stacked against me that have happened to me sexually, physically, emotionally, that I'm a victor. And I wanted to share my story with someone who comes from the place I came from, a young girl that came from the project like I did, to show her that if I can do it, look, I did it, you can do it too. So I want to share it and not be embarrassed by it, but actually help to empower someone else with my story.
Can you pinpoint any of the keys for your current success?
I would say resilience is important. I would say hard work, determination, not giving up. They're common traits with successful business people. You really, it's not about luck. It really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not luck. It's working hard and having a laser focus on what you want to achieve and just pursuing your goals without giving up. You have to be persistent and diligent and continue to work hard towards your goal. If you pour hard work into something, you're going to reap the benefits of it. And again, I understand that not all businesses are successful because 80% fail within the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but failure can be a teacher. And I failed at one business of mine, but then I continued on with Curl. So sometimes failure happens, but you can use that as a learning pad as well.
Prior to forming Curl, you worked in corporate America, but that was not working out?
Right. I actually loved, when I first got hired, I was so proud to have been selected to work for the prestigious Intel Corporation. You know, it was a hard corporation to navigate,
mm-hmm.
and to even be interviewed for. And in Sacramento, there aren't a lot of, you know, really big corporations like Intel. So being offered two jobs, I had two different job offers.
Right.
I felt, wow, okay, this is amazing. I'm going to do an amazing work here. I'm going to show myself. I'm going to prove how special I am in corporate America. I'm going to rise to the ranks. And I was proud to be a corporate Intel citizen. And I planned to retire there. I didn't plan to leave Intel until I met that one manager that had a different vision for me. It wasn't to keep me and to move me forward and propel me forward and help me grow and excel and do well. He wants to get rid of me. And I was a star performer. And so it was very evident what his motivation was over time. It wasn't at first, but it became very evident that it was racially charged. And I was so disappointed because I had never experienced that before. So I came in, I didn't come in at corporate America jaded.
Mm-hmm.
I had never experienced racism. So I didn't come in looking for it. I didn't come in expecting it. I didn't come in thinking it would happen to me because I'm a hard worker, you know, and I'm different. So it did. And when it did, it was a big slap in my face and it was a big wake up call. And it let me know at that moment that this could happen to you again. And I'm not ready for this battle. I don't have to prove myself 10 times over just to be equal to my counterpart, my Caucasian counterpart. I want to be based, have my success be based on my effort.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I can do that, I felt, was through entrepreneurship. And I want to own, if I'm going to work this hard, I better work this hard for myself so I can leave some behind for my children.
Now, you put up with this animosity towards you for 7 years. What led you to form your own company?
Well, I was at Intel for 7 years, but the whole situation with Mr. McCarthy was a 2-year stint of that 4 years, seven years, because I came in as an intern,
mm-hmm.
and then when I graduated, I got two job offers, and I started my career there. And so it was the midpoint of my career where I actually had Mr. McCarthy have that experience. But shortly thereafter, it was interesting because I was so stressed because Mr. McCarthy put me on this corrective action plan, which is Intel's way of getting rid of you in 6 months. They have to document it. And so
mm-hmm.
it's like pretty much his process. And God, I prayed about it because I was so stressed. I had this young baby to take care of. I was a single mother. I couldn't get employed. There was no room for that. And I prayed about it. I was so stressed. And God moved him to Malaysia. He took a job offer in Malaysia. And that enabled me to interview with another department inside Intel, because before that, he was trashing my name when people would call for a reference.
Okay.
So I had a new manager, and the manager sang my praises. I got a better promotion at Intel, and I could have stayed and said, okay, whew, that was over. I made it. I'm going to stay at Intel. No, I went to my new job, but then I started making plans to leave and do my own thing. And so I started at that moment researching what kind of career, what kind of business I wanted to start. And I had 5 different ideas. But my fiance at the time, now my husband, said, Nahisha, you are mixing and matching all these products in your kitchen, your bathroom sink, and making things in your home concoction, why not look into something regarding hair care? Like, this is something that you're passionate about. And I thought, that's a good idea, you know? And so that's how it was birthed. And dinner, we were at dinner in Santa Barbara for my birthday weekend on a napkin, and talked about the names and the products. And so we came back that next Monday and went to work to make it happen.
Now, obviously, in the back of your mind, you must have had some type of science background if you're mixing and matching in the kitchen sink.
No science background. A business major, marketing concentration. But I was just doing simplistic mixes like natural oil blends for hair that weren't too heavy. Then also like leave-in conditioners, very, very simple stuff. I hired a cosmetic chemist to do my formulations for me.
Okay.
But the stuff I made at home was very basic. But then I was mixing and matching different hair care brands and products, one shampoo or conditioner from this line, you know, I had, you know, styler from that line, but nothing really for me. That really was the aha product. And so that's kind of the struggle at that moment. There was a newly natural movement that was happening where women were looking to embrace their natural textures and lots of, you know, relaxer sales started to decline. And so I kind of launched Curls right at the cusp of this new market.
What was the first product that you actually put out?
I initially had four. I started with four for the adult line and four for the kids line, because I instantly realized after doing my due diligence that there was also a need for quality organic kids hair care line products that have textured hair. So initially it was going to be adult only, but instantly we added the kids line, four and four. It was a hydrating shampoo, a deep conditioner, a moisturizing leave-in conditioner, and a styling cream. The bare necessities for curly hair. And that was four for each of those brands, one for the wig, because Curls is for adults and Curly Q's for children. Now we have over 35 SKUs in the Curls adult brand, 18 for Curly Q's for kids, and we have a baby line as well. It's a curl. I added that after I had my last child and wanted to have an organic line that wasn't drying for her hair. So now we have three lines, and the products are available in Target, Select, Walmart, Sally Beauty, CVS, Rite Aid stores.
Obviously, you had faith in yourself because you took money out of your savings account to launch this company.
Yes, I did. You know, you have to have a little faith, and you have to invest money to make money. So it was all or nothing, and the stakes were real. I had a child to take care of, and so she was my motivation for sure. And I figured after doing my due diligence and doing my research and digging really into the market, it felt to me this is surefire. Like I'm tapping an unmet need here. And so it was something that I believed wholeheartedly in.
When you go to a particular beauty salon or beauty shop, you don't see that many African-American products on shelf. How does it make you feel when you walk into, I'll say, quote, Sally's and see your product on the shelf?
People ask me that question a lot. And it's not what people think. The first thing I think is, where is it positioned? Did they place it in the right shop? Why aren't there many of this item here? What's going on? You know, so it's not, this joyous thing. It's instant scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and speaking with Maisha Dellinger, President, CEO, and founder of Curls LLC. When did you all move to North Texas, Maisha?
We moved about 2 years ago from California to Frisco, Texas.
Why so?
Well, my husband and I actually were on our way to date night, and I got a call from my accountant, and he said, even though you've been paying an X amount of dollars quarterly for your prepaid taxes, you need to spend several thousand more because, you know, of the sales and extra sales. And I thought, we had discussed this and considered moving. California is in the bottom five worst states in the U.S. to have a small business.
Right.
Texas was in the top five.
Okay.
So we did a quick comparison, same income, live in Dallas, Texas, same income in California.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a no-brainer. The amount of taxes was enough for me to move. Now, I did not want to just move because of solely just because of tax, because Wyoming was number one state. And I quality of life is important. So I had to move to a state in a city that I would actually enjoy beyond just the taxation savings. So Texas, only place for me. I didn't consider Houston at all was an option. Mm-hmm. San Antonio was an option. Austin was not an option. Dallas was the only option. And so it has a robust labor force here.
Right.
Regulations are great. The tax savings and the quality of life here. Weather is not as extreme as in other places. So it was a no-brainer after putting the whole puzzle together. Also, my manufacturer for the products, actually the contract filler who fills the products for us, has always been in Dallas when I was in California.
Mm.
Let's see, Salad Duties in Dallas, okay. One of my vendors. 45 minutes flight to Walmart. It just makes sense.
Plus, it's in the middle of the country, so you 3 hours max anywhere you want to go.
Anywhere. Yep.
When you look back at the process that you've gone through thus far, any lessons learned that you can pass along?
A lot of lessons and things that, you know, pitfalls I avoided because I did get a mentor. I would say first and foremost, and it sounds redundant, people say this all the time, I can't just implore enough to say get a mentor in your industry because mm-hmm. having a mentor and not going it alone
right.
will enable you to avoid pitfalls that can cost you a lot of money. Definitely get a mentor. Number two, if you're looking to launch a product into like a retail space, don't go there year one. Like, take the time to establish your fan base, your demand. I thought I wanted to go to Walmart year one, and I actually pitched it and was rejected.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it happened because if you don't sell and you don't have enough demand, you put the product on yourself and sell, you're going to get your product returned with a huge bill that could cost your shirt and your business. So take the time to build your demand before you try to go big into the big box retailers. That's a number one. A number two bullet for me. And then number three, do your due diligence. You should know your market inside and out and know your competition. You need to know what your market's all about your competition, and know about everything you need to know to make sure you're successful from pricing, how much you should price your product for, what kind of profit margin you're going to get. You need to know, you know, who your competitors are, how they're doing in business, where they place, what kind of stores are they in. There's so much to know about your industry, but you need to spend the time to do your due diligence so that there aren't any surprises and that you're prepared to really actively participate and compete.
Now that you're quote-unquote nationwide, how do you keep Curl at a competitive edge?
Wow. I know it's a never-ending cycle of there's so much competition. It enters the market every year,
right.
year upon year. The barrier to entry is so low now. So it really is keeping fresh new products available to the customer that are customer-driven and actually beneficial, not just what you think the customer wants. But also, for us, we're organic. We're all authentic. I am the consumer, so I understand her needs. So that gives me an advantage over some of these big national chains or manufacturers like Pantene, Dove of the world. They are trying to learn mm-hmm. how to speak to black women, but I am her. So I understand her intuitively. So that's an advantage, absolutely. I don't have to host a focus group to know what black women think.
Obviously, when you started this, you were along with your fiance, now husband. But who makes up your team currently?
Oh, well, I have a host of very important people that, sorry for them, they are my right and left hand, but I am such a driver. It's so hard. I understand. So my team that I have are very special, very special. Monica King, all of our events, we sponsor up to 30 events a month, whether we are hosting them ourselves or we're sponsoring someone else's or we're at a trade show. We have about 30 events a month. And we have street team members in most of the major cities in the U.S. that she manages all of these girls too. My publicist, Tyra Lindsay, amazing woman who does so much work, and she pushes the brand and lots of exposure for me and the company. Then we have our warehouse staff. Without them, I mean, you wouldn't get your orders in time. They have to deal with shipping, you know, to Walmart and Sally and getting our Target orders out. They're very important. My social media team, again, connected with my consumers who are very important to us. So it's a team. It takes a team.
When you look at the success that you've had thus far, and obviously you're committed to passing this knowledge on to young women, particularly African-American women, why is that important to you?
Well, it's important because if I had someone that would have reached back to me and helped me back when I was looking for assistance and a mentor, I could have been further along in my life. So I feel like it's important to whom much is given, much is required, for me to reach back and give that. So it's my heart to do, because I would love to help someone else achieve success. And so on that note, April 1st, or host that first, I'm hosting my first in New York City, Empowerment Luncheon, Girls Empowerment Luncheon, where we are bringing in 100 African-American girls from different boroughs in New York to connect them with successful and dynamic Black women from multiple of industries to be their sponsor, not a mentor. A mentor is someone you check in every once in a while, but a sponsor is someone that will actually breathe in life into your soul and connect with you and invest their time into you. So we're going to connect these young ladies one-on-one with someone that in their industry that they're interested in achieving success in when they grow up. And so we've got all of our sponsors lined up, and all the girls are come, and they're going to have a connecting, mentoring experience over an amazing lunch and lots of class for them. And that's going to be the kickoff for my campaign, Pearls Girls Rule the World. That's on April 1st in New York City.
How has the market grown since you first started out? Obviously, more African-American women, and I would assume, you know, some other ethnicities are now going the natural way instead of having a processed hair, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's grown tremendously. That's the reason why Linda Sullivan, she was a buyer at Target. She's a Caucasian woman, blonde hair, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
She managed the ethnic category. She realized herself for the relaxer category had plummeted. They were horrible. And she wanted to refresh her ethnic hair care offering. She didn't have, she had like all the Jerry Curl juices, the green grease products, and all those items, and relaxers. She saw us on social media and a few different places, and four other brands. And so she wanted to refresh her category. She said, these young new brands are doing great things. They're underground, but maybe we could look at adding them to 105 stores and see how this works. I need to refresh my category.
Gotcha.
So she brought us in 105 doors, me and four other brands, gave us a test run. And we blew it out the water. She added us to 400 more stores, blew that out, 800. And it kept going until we went nationwide, and she kept growing and growing and adding more and more products. So it became a destination. Target is now the destination for natural hair.
Maisha Dellinger, founder and CEO of Curls LLC, and author of Against All Odds, From the Projects to the Penthouse. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as your future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.